KNW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Breaking news out of Texas, the suspect accused of killing five members of a family on Friday has been captured. That's according to the San Jacinto County District Attorney. Congressional leaders are RSVPing yes to President Biden's invitation to talk about the debt limit. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says he's hoping for a deal because people are sick of the fighting.
Federal authority to regulate pollution. Plus, that Starship rocket did fail. Drama that goes with it. It looks like it blew up over Texas. SpaceX grounded in Texas after rocket failure damages wildlife preserves. Hitting on spokesman Brigadier General Pat Ryder says another
1,500 troops will go to the southern border with Title 42 coming to an end next week.
Military personnel will not directly participate in law enforcement activities.
Title 42 is the COVID pandemic rule that kept migrants in Mexico. Illinois State Police say a seventh person has now died from a crash on Interstate 55 yesterday. This is ABC News.
Taylor Green.
Federal authorities say they've broken up a large online drug trafficking operation.
It's being called the largest ever operation against drug trafficking on the dark web. FBI agents making 288 arrests, seizing more than 100 firearms, 850 kilos of drugs, and $53 million in cash, all from a drug ring operating completely undercover and online, selling illegal drugs billed as legal brand name pills.
The drug traffickers are confident that by operating anonymously on the dark web, they can operate outside the bounds of the law.
Attorney General Merrick Garland says many of the seized drugs were counterfeit or laced with potentially deadly amounts of fentanyl. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
According to a preliminary report, West Reading, Pennsylvania chocolate factory workers smelled rotten eggs before a natural gas explosion leveled the building and killed seven people. A new Negro Leagues baseball league will be built in Kansas City, Missouri with the help of Bank of America. It's offering the first million of a $25 million expansion.
I wish that were true.
ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Our record high energy and water costs, putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes, with inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive. While you may not ask for it, that requires to keep Wisconsin warm, cool, and your local energy assistance providers are here to help.
By Congress, and judges should no Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, overturning Chevron water, could have major implications for the Biden administration's ability to tackle climate change, including possibly derailing the Environmental Protection Agency's current push to curb climate-warming carbon emissions from electricity generation and transportation, the nation's two highest polluting industries.
Let me be clear about this case.
This is about allowing judges who have no skills, no expertise in these things, to make decisions about federal regulations rather than leaving that to the experts at the federal
agency. For Civic Media, I'm Jane Madner. Here's what you need to know. 14-year-olds could potentially serve alcohol to seated customers in bars and restaurants under a new bill circulated by a pair of Republican lawmakers. Currently, only workers over 18 can serve alcohol to customers in Wisconsin. The lawmakers say their idea creates a simple solution to Wisconsin's workforce shortage in the food and beverage industry. Governor Evers listed numerous initiatives in his proposed budget to address workforce shortages, but WPR reporting GOP lawmakers plan to remove over 500 items from the governor's proposed budget. And today, Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee are expected to remove nearly all of the governor's series of measures on gun safety, that despite Wisconsinites' wide support of universal background checks and red flag laws. I'm Jane Madner. This is Civic Media News.
Pending an investigation.
Good.
U.S. Senate Republicans, joined by conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin.
Bug Tussle is building out the best fiber network in rural Wisconsin to deliver ultra-fast fiber internet where others can't or won't. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bug Tussle is bringing fiber internet services to your area at an honest price without any contracts or data caps. Call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com and get connected with with Bunk Tussle today for internet, cellular, right now, and entertainment.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources at aarp.org/caregiving.
Check out our website.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the civic media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show
is the Great Picker, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always standing room only? You ain't going to find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't going to find that in Minnesota standing room only, because you go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
That's the way it is, man.
So, members of the Writers Guild of America went on strike at midnight.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You were supposed to get a Kodak Panther screen, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the toy from practice.
Down the way, we had conditions, as it always does.
45 and older, don't let butt stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
We know have their careers in Hollywood saying it's coming. Get ready. And it has happened, and we'll see where this takes us. But here to share some thoughts on what's going on there and, you know, maybe some other good labor stories, I've asked our good friend Hamilton Nolan to come talk with us. He's a labor reporter over at InTheseTimes.org, the website. Hamilton, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, man. Always happy to be here.
So what do we make of the writer's strike? What's going on here?
You know, I was out on the picket line today, super pumped, a lot of solidarity out there. They called the strike at midnight last night. You know, it's the screenwriters in Hollywood are basically facing a lot of the same kind of pressures that every other industry is facing. I mean, the Hollywood studios are actually trying to turn some screenwriting jobs into essentially gig writing jobs, just like every other industry, you know. So as you said, it's been 15 years since the Writers Guild went on strike. The last time they went on strike, the big issue was streaming, which was a new thing. And the Writers Guild was kind of saying, hey, we think we should probably get some money off this new thing. And the studios were saying, oh, it's not going to be a big deal. And you saw how that one went. So now they're, you know, the business is changing again. A lot of the old contracts are based on advertising revenue in that business. And now, you know, it's streaming revenue. So you got to change. You got to update. You got to stay current with the technology. And that's what the union's trying to do. And they're trying to keep AI from eating up screenwriters' jobs, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, I got that ChatGPT just to play around with, and I got to tell you, it is scary at what that thing can do. Even just at the point we're at in this moment, the kind of things it comes up with, it's going to replace. You know, we're all going to be replaced at some point if this continues.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. If you think about it, you know, there's zero chance that government regulators are going to act fast enough to get out ahead of where AI, the way AI is being deployed at by employers, you know. So unions and union contracts are going to be the only firewall that's going to protect people from AI. And so what the screenwriters, you know, it is very interesting. They're trying to get language in their contract with Hollywood about AI, basically saying AI is a tool that can be used by writers, but you can't use it, you know, to replace your writers and to be your writers. And that, for me as a journalist, is pretty relevant too, because our industry is going to be going through the same thing in all of our contracts that are coming up, trying to get language saying basically the same thing. You know, AI is a tool, you can use it, it can help you out, but you cannot take it and replace human writers with it. So that's a big deal for everybody.
No, it really is a big deal. And in fact, there was that story that came, I think it came out today or maybe it was yesterday, that the guy who they call the godfather of AI left Google and was saying, hey, you know, this is bad.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty remarkable that the guy who helped create it is going, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's scary, man. If you think about how AI works, you know, they fed it all this material that humans created, and now it basically chews it up and spits it back out to us. And it's very ironic if you train a machine on material that we all created, and then the machine comes back and takes all our jobs. So it's a big, big, huge labor issue, I think, for a lot of industries over the next few years, man.
Yeah, and I see corporate America doing this more and more, which is why I'm happy to see a lot of journalists, you know, like you, and you know, I subscribe to a couple of these Substack pages, and I see that you've got one that you're launching it right now. How Things Work is the name of the Substack. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I just launched my Substack this week. Everyone can subscribe howthingswork.substack.com. You know, a Substack is basically just a reader-supported site, and a lot of writers have been doing those over the last few years. I'm going to give it a shot. It's a dream as a, you know, journalism is an extremely unstable industry, like a lot of industries. Been a ton of layoffs in journalism over the last year. And, you know, it's a dream to have your own reader-supported publication, which is what the Substack is. So I think, you know, the longer I'm in this business, the more I realize, like, for everybody out there, if you care about anything, and you know, you have to support the media that covers the stuff that you care about, you know. So if you're a person who cares about labor, you know, put your money where your mouth is and you know, donate to the Rick Smith Show and subscribe to my Substack and subscribe to In These Times Magazine and Jacobin and The Nation and all the places that do the journalism that you care about. You know, the only way all these places, especially independent media, survives is by readers supporting it. So whatever it is you care about, please subscribe to it.
Yeah, I signed up for it, and I hope others will as well, because I'm excited to see what you come out with. Because, you know, as you said, there's some independence that comes and having your own thing. Like I do this little radio program. What comes out of this is all me. Like it or totally. Not, it's all me.
And, you know, I mean, you know this as good as anybody, but for the labor movement, man, I got a whole email inbox full of thousands of press releases from unions all across the country about stuff they're doing. And, you know, that stuff is only going to get covered if labor journalism can be a viable job that you can make a living at. And, you know, so I wish that the labor movement itself as a whole and sort of the institutions in the union world would think about supporting labor journalism as part of the labor movement, you know, because, and that goes from you to me, to everybody, the relative handful of people who cover this stuff. I mean, if there's no labor reporters, then there's nobody to cover your campaigns. So.
Now you said something a little bit ago that caught my attention, Hamilton. You're talking about the unions being the ones, especially on the AI front, that are going to have to deal with this, because you look at Washington, there's nothing happening on the Washington front. I don't see states taking this on. So it has to be working people and collective bargaining. And you know, we keep hearing all this conversation about, you know, the no labels people or the third way people, or, you know, there's always another way. And I keep saying the way we unite this country is in the workplace. We do it by unionizing. We do it by taking on an issue and coming together over it. This AI thing seems like it could be a big deal, because as you said, you know, writers on Hollywood, journalists like you, truck drivers like me, we're all going to be replaceable once this happens. Doctors, lawyers, you name it. There's an opportunity here.
Totally. You know, and I don't know if people are ready for what's coming down the pike in terms of what this can do. And it's, you know, it's too bad that union density has gotten so low that we're facing this with an army of 10% of the workforce instead of 50% of the workforce, you know. But yeah, I mean, it absolutely can be. I mean, I think that everybody is engaged in the day-to-day struggle of just doing their job, and it's not always looking at the bigger issues coming down the pike, but it is really true. I mean, I spent the past year working on a book, reporting a book about the labor movement, and went all over the country and talked to all types of people. And it really is amazing the same kinds of issues that are affecting everybody from fast food workers to drivers, you know, to college professors, to white collar workers. It's all the forces of money trying to suck money out of the workforce and transfer it to the investor class. And yeah, unions are the way. I mean, I believe it. It's electoral politics can be a sideshow to the labor movement if we can all unite behind that.
No, it comes down to, you know, it's how you're going to feed your kids. I mean, this is, you know, this used to be what motivated people. How are we going to keep a roof over their head, put food on the table, that stuff. And look, you look at this obscene amount of inflation that's gone on. And while the right wing and their powerful echo chamber have pointed it at Biden, the reality is it's corporate America who's screwing us over. You know, in fact, the Wall Street Journal just said it. I don't know. Did you see what the Wall Street Journal had to say? About inflation, you know, why is inflation so sticky?
Yeah,
it could be corporations. Did you know it could be corporations?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's pretty well empirically documented at this point that all the post-pandemic inflation is really being driven by corporations just purely raising prices because they can, right? Not inflation driven by higher wages or blah blah blah. It's just corporations looking around being like, everybody expects inflation, so we're going to give it to them. We're going to give them higher prices. So corporate profits at an all-time high. Everybody's hurting inflation. And yeah, I tell people all the time, you know, if you're frustrated by politics and all the red and blue and you can't stand it and Fox News and it all gets on your nerves, man, put that energy into the labor movement, you know, because the labor movement can change things more directly.
No, I'm right there with you. It's about direct action. You're right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Hamilton Nolan, labor reporter over at In These Times. Also just launched a new Substack page. I hope you'll check it out, How Things Work, howthingswork.substack.com. We'll get links out on social media, how you can sign up for that. There's a free component, I know, but we need people subscribing, right?
Definitely. You can subscribe for free or you can buy a subscription and support. So whatever you're comfortable with, I love anybody subscribing.
There you go. Now, one of the stories that you've got is, you know, some reform going on at one of the big unions, the UFCW, which I've been calling for a very long time. In fact, you know, UFCW is, you know, near and dear to my heart. My grandmother was a member for, you know, for 25 odd years. She was a shop steward. She was the chief steward there for a number of years. Local 888 in Cleveland was, you know, I knew them as a kid growing up, and they got a special place. But I got to tell you, I'm not seeing it now.
Yeah, man, it's really interesting. As you know, like UFCW, biggest private sector union in the AFL-CIO, 1.2 million members, big union, and so much potential to be a powerful union, you know, but really through the pandemic, even though they had all the grocery workers, you didn't see those workers come out of the pandemic with a lot of gains, you know, and then you see things like Trader Joe's unionizing independently rather than joining the UFCW. Things like that are signs of like a union that is a little bit insular and a little bit sort of not doing the work that it could be doing. And there now is a real reform movement inside the UFCW, similar to what happened inside UAW and the Teamsters, although much less far along than those movements are. But, you know, inside the UFCW, I just went to their convention last week and watched the sort of reformers work. They're trying to get the same things that they got inside UAW and the Teamsters, with namely one member, one vote, and investment in organizing, you know, rank and file members on the board, basic like good union democracy things that are clearly are good for the union. And so when you see those things getting shot down repeatedly by the people running the union, it does really make you wonder who do those people running that union think that they're serving?
Yeah. So do we think that UFCW is going to move in that direction? What are we seeing, you know, down the road here?
It's interesting. Like I said, this was really their first concrete step was taking this to the convention, putting a lot of constitutional amendments on the floor, which lost for the most part. But you know, they all said this was the first time that you even had that kind of discussion and really open combat inside the UFCW. So they actually considered that a success, and they're going to build for the next 5 years up to the next convention. And, you know, it's worth saying that, like, this is not some sort of random band of nobodies. Like, the people running it include the head of the UFCW's biggest local, which is out in Washington State. UFCW 3000 has more than 50,000 members, single biggest local inside UFCW. And Faye Gunther, who is the president of that local, is also kind of the leader of this reform movement. And a lot of the people inside that local are some of the most active people in the movement. So it really does. I think they're looking to pull in some other big locals in UFCW, and I do think it has a lot of potential by the time the next convention rolls around to really get some things accomplished.
Yeah, something to look forward to, and also maybe to light a fire to get some of those things moving and get one of the bigger unions actually out there more publicly. Could not be a bad thing. But Hamilton, I appreciate the time. Good stuff. Hope folks will check out the newly launched Substack page, How Things Work, howthingswork.substack.com. We'll get links out on social media. Hamilton Nolan, appreciate the time.
Thanks, Ben. And subscribe to Rick Smith Show, too.
Thanks. Appreciate that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, I'm glad Hamilton brought up the AI component of the writer's strike, because it's going to be a huge thing. And it's something that I've been talking about for probably about 10 years, the technology that's going to replace, it's going to replace us. The reality is what it is. And, you know, with every technological advancement, I've said before, I'm not a Luddite. I want technology to help make our lives better. But if you look at the technological advances of the past, it's always been at the expense of working people. A handful of people get wildly wealthy from these technological changes. They line their pockets. They get, you know, they get more wealth, power, and status. And working people are the ones who their families struggle. Their kids suffer. This could be, and this was 10 years ago I brought this up, this technological, you know, period could be one, the first one ever where we go, you know what, we're not going to let that happen. We're going to use the tax code in a way that says, okay, we want you to encourage you to use better technology and all of this, but there's going to be a technology tax when you replace people. None of this stuff of, oh, hey, you know, we've got automation and we're going to automate you out of all these jobs, from factory workers to truck drivers to writers to doctors and lawyers and all of the what is coming. You're going to pay the cost of what that labor would cost, and we're going to make those workers whole and get them through their lifespan so that their families don't struggle. So you don't have steel workers who are making $50,000 a year training for a job that's going to pay them $725. You don't have truck drivers who are, you know, now making $45,000 a year, $50,000 a year, ending up getting a job, you know, saying, do you want fries with that, until they automate that, making $725 an hour. We've got to create an environment where, sorry, it's going to cost a little bit more to have these technological changes happen, but it's going to be a little bit, it's going to be less painful. less painful for the folks at the bottom. And I don't know that our political system is capable of taking that on. I don't know that it's capable of solving any real problems. I know it's capable of creating a lot of problems. I look at what Republicans are doing right now, and at every turn, something new is popping up going, hey, that's new. For instance, and I give you the for instance, I wasn't expecting this yet. I was expecting it, but not yet. But Rolling Stone just reported that Republicans across the country are now reconsidering no-fault divorces. And look, there's no surprise on why they would want to do that. You're going to take away their ability to have any say over their body by making abortion illegal. You're going to block certain contraceptions. And eventually, and I've been saying this for a while, Roe was the beginning. Undo Roe, then Griswold will go by the wayside, and also the divorce stuff. And why is that important? Well, power and control. Because what we know now is, women leave marriages. I think the statistic was 80% of marriages in those divorces, women are the ones that are leaving. So by making it ending no-fault divorces, women can't leave. And you go, why would you want that? Again, it's power and control. And I point to this story in Texas. Evidently back in March, I believe it was, a Texas guy sued three women that he said helped his ex-wife end their pregnancy. Evidently, he was snooping in her purse, found the abortion pills, found some text messages on how they were going to do this and how they were going to get the drug and all this stuff, and that they concealed this. And he sued them. He, according to these women, was just a complete abusive, manipulative, controlling, and wanted to blackmail her with this because it's Texas. Now, understand, this is one of those moments where the pendulum has swung way to the side of the worst people. So you've got this guy who knows the ex-wife is pregnant. She doesn't want it. So he finds this information, and now he's going to blackmail her into staying because, the laws allow her to leave. In a perfect world, once she says, I do, well, you're done. But she can leave. So this was a blackmail tool. Now, these women now are suing him because they said he's a serial emotional abuser. He was trying to control her, but they're suing him because he knew about it. And this is where you go, thank you, Supreme Court. Thank you for making so muddying the waters so the trailer park gets its new reality show. And we knew this kind of stuff was going to happen, especially with the bounty hunter laws. This is what Republicans have brought us. And understand, this isn't by chance. When you game this stuff out, these stories are going to pop up. People are going to do what people do. And that's great if your goal is to divide and conquer. That's great if you want to keep people pitted against each other. If you want to have the unwashed masses fighting amongst themselves while you rob them blind, while AI takes off, while there's a massive redistribution of wealth and this inflation that's out of control, thank you, corporate America, and them holding wages down. It's a great sideshow. Gets people all worked up. And if you can make the laws bad enough, well, it's even more entertainment while we're being robbed blind. Because remember, why is inflation so sticky? Could be corporations. Maybe you've heard. It could be corporations doing all this. And you see this kind of insanity with these suits? Could be Republicans doing it. Huh. Imagine that. Could be terrible policy that has brought us this. All by design. Things are working exactly as they're supposed to. That's the part that you know, people, oh, things are broken, things are horrible. No, no. Things are working the way they're planned. Mission accomplished. We hate each other. There's polling out there that proves it. And how is the best way to take advantage of that? Rob is blind. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1830. That was the birthday of Richard Trevelyan, one of the early leaders of the U.S. labor movement and the fight for the eight-hour workday. Of English descent, Richard was the son of a Cornish farmer. As a young man, Trevelyan took up the trade of a ship carpenter. Soon after, he traveled to Australia to seek his fortune and to prospect for gold. The horrible working conditions caused him to speak out for workers in Australia and New Zealand before arriving in the United States. First, he came to New Orleans, where he became involved in the trade union movement. When the Civil War broke out, he traveled north. In 1862, he settled in Detroit, working in the Detroit dry docks. Soon after, Richard became president of the Ship Carpenters and Caulkers International Union. He was well known as an eloquent speaker for the cause of labor. He founded the Detroit Trades Assembly. A short-lived organization, the assembly attempted to bring together skilled tradesmen to organize for improved working conditions and hours. His skills as an orator often put Trevelyan in high demand in the nearby city of Chicago. On the 4th of July celebration, held by the Chicago Trades Assembly in 1965, Trevelyan called for the eight-hour workday. In his speeches, Trevelyan advocated that workers should not see a reduction of pay for working 8 hours. Instead, he argued that increased productivity of workers should allow their wages to stay steady. He was also a proponent of worker education. He argued that a well-read workforce could better articulate its demands. In 1869, he was elected president of the National Labor Union, an early attempt to join workers across the country under the banner of one organization. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
While the powers that be constantly warn us about foreign threats to our democracy from Russian trolls, TikTok, etc., there is scant coverage of an actual assault on our people's democratic liberties by forces on our own soil. It's coming from extremist right-wing Republican lawmakers who have autocratic control over more than a score of America's state governments. Their obscure anti-democracy weapon is called preemption, the dangerous power of state officials to nullify laws passed by local people. It's supposed to be used rarely, carefully, and only in emergency situations, but today's radical big government Republicans have weaponized it, routinely overturning local actions that the GOP's corporate funders don't like. Local decisions to protect worker safety, outlaw loan sharking, shut down puppy mills, prevent workplace discrimination, stop pollution, control political corruption, and so many more popular democratic reforms are being abolished by Republican autocrats in service to plutocrats. Some 500 more of these usurpations are moving through state legislatures across the country now, with practically no public notice. Embarrassingly, GOP leaders in my state of Texas have been leading this charge against the people's democratic will, and they're now enacting a nuclearized escalation of their attack. Their new weapon has been dubbed Death Star, a state law that will preemptively ban cities and counties from passing corporate regulations stronger than state regulation, which is infamously feeble. The ban, gleefully pushed by a horde of lobbyists for brand-name corporate elites, includes letting corporations overturn existing local protections. This is Jim Hightower saying, "This is a wholesale usurpation of your and my liberty to govern ourselves. In exchange for political funding, GOP officials are literally outsourcing the people's democratic authority." Learn more at supportdemocracy.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, it's quite remarkable the lengths that our Republican friends will go through to keep people from voting, especially young people. I mean, it's quite remarkable. You look at, you know, what's going on in Ohio. You look at what's going on in Texas. A lot of places, trying to keep those 18, 19, 20-year-olds away from the ballot box, especially the educated ones. Because, we're going to crack down on those colleges. After what happened in Wisconsin, I think that's their only way to victory. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on, I've asked our good friend Mike Lux to come talk with us. Mike's the president of American Family Voices. AmericanFamilyVoices.org is the website. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. Always fun to talk with you.
So what do you make of all of this? I mean, it seems like every election cycle, there's a new scheme, there's a new plan, you know, whether it's hanging chads or voting while black or caging or, cross-check, or there's always a new scheme. Is this 2024 scheme going to be, how do we keep kids away from the ballot box?
Oh, that's absolutely going to be their top priority. I mean, they always want to keep black people away from the ballot box. They're torn. The Republicans are torn between wanting to keep Hispanic folks away from the ballot box or trying to convert them. They're doing some of both, which is hard to do at the same time. But they definitely want to keep young people away, because young people are very progressive folks, and they get what's going on. They want to join unions. They want to help progressive causes. So Republicans are going to go all out. And you can see it from this story that my colleague Lauren Windsor broke that had Trump's lawyer talking about how terrible it is that it's easy for young people to vote and how we need to do everything we can to keep young people from voting. And she was very blatant about it. This was at the RNC meeting that she spoke at recently. She's totally blatant about saying that it was bad that young people, that it was easy for young people to vote.
Again, it comes back down to it's the original intent mentality, isn't it? I mean, the people who tell us that, you know, the Constitution's only what written without, you know, people like, well, Clita was her name, understanding that she couldn't vote either when the original intent of the Constitution was in place. It was only white land-owning males, no woman folk, and certainly no one under 21. And there's some who want to take us back in that direction. Look at the legislation they're moving in places all across this country. It's going back. The true ideology is that original intent.
Well, no. I mean, the founders were, had all kinds of flaws, slavery being the number one on the list. But some of them actually believe that people should be able to vote in fair elections. These folks don't believe in that. Talk about Texas, where the governor can now appoint somebody that can overturn, an election in a Democratic county. I mean, they are absolutely trying to take away fair and free elections away from people. Because they know that most people don't like this crazy shit that they're doing, this stuff that they want to do, roll back Social Security, hurt unions, all of this stuff is really unpopular, but they figure if they can overturn elections and keep people from voting, it doesn't matter whether it's unpopular or not.
Yeah, it's crazy what they're doing. And they're doing it. Look, here's the thing. They're doing it out in public. They're telling us who they are. And this is, if you're wearing the red hat, then you are in favor of this. And look, I've talked to a lot of Republican voters who go, well, those kids are just too immature. They're believing all of that Democratic garbage. And I follow up with, look, these kids don't want to lead the lives their parents had to struggle through. They don't want to see their ability to make a decent wage taken from them. They certainly don't want to see the Social Security taken from them. They don't want to be in the desperate positions that their parents have gone through. They want better. And it makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes total sense. You know, when Rick, you remember we did all this polling of working class voters in hard hit counties, and more than half of them had suffered recent job loss, had had health care benefits taken away, had had their pensions taken away. You know, all of this crap that they had to go through. And you're absolutely right. Their kids are seeing that, and they're saying, "We got to have a better way. We got to figure out a better life." You know, and so they're rebelling against that, and the Republicans hate that. They don't want young people to vote.
Yeah, which is why we're seeing this debt ceiling hostage situation. Where, yeah. You know, unlike before, I never really believed the Republicans wanted to shoot the hostages, us. I'm looking at this Klan now, and I'm going, I'm pretty sure they want to shoot the hostage. I'm pretty sure they want the economic chaos that would come from a default, that they want the pain and suffering so that they can say it's all Biden's fault, as they've been doing with inflation. Because maybe you've heard, Wall Street Journal today asked the question, why is inflation so sticky? They said it could be corporations. Who knew? Who knew that it could be corporations, Mike?
Yeah. Oh, gee, the corporate profits are at an all-time high. I wonder what's going on. I mean, the price gouging that has been going on has been crazy. And these corporate CEOs in their stockholder meetings, they brag about it. They're like, yeah, and, you know, in this moment, you know, we can raise prices as much as we want, you know, and everybody will just blame it on inflation. They say stuff like that in their stockholder meetings. They're, you know, talk about being blatant. You know, we're living now in a culture where the folks who are all about the greed aren't hiding it anymore. Just like, you know, folks who are all about the racism aren't hiding that anymore. You know, the two are linked. It's amazing what people are saying and how they feel no shame about it.
And that's the thing, no shame whatsoever. I mean, that's the amazing part in all this to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Mike Lux, president of American Family Voices, AmericanFamilyVoices.org, their website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. And also the polling that was done, you know, last summer into fall, you know, talking about issues that are important to working people. And look, I look at Biden, did a couple of week tour talking about infrastructure and reshoring manufacturing. We're doing all that stuff. To me, that's incredibly important. And this debt ceiling thing ties into this because it's my view that Republicans want to stop that. They want to stop the investments that are happening because they want to do it. I mean, this is because they want, it's all about the, hey, look what we did, as opposed to look what's being done. And I argue Trump had 4 years to do all of this stuff. Had he proposed an infrastructure bill to go with infrastructure week 400 times, I would have supported it. But they're finally getting things done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Republicans talk about all this stuff, but they didn't get it done. The only thing that they got done, their only major legislative achievement was this huge tax cuts for the rich bill. That was the only thing they got done. They talked about infrastructure, but they didn't do it. So you do have to give Biden credit. He's gotten a bunch of stuff done, and manufacturing jobs are coming back. New jobs in the auto industry, new jobs in the solar industry, new jobs in the wind industry, new jobs in chips, silicon chips, which are important for pretty much everything that we make. And it's happening. And, you know, the infrastructure bill was so important that did so many different things. I mean, we're rebuilding schools as well as highways. We're getting lead out of water. It's so great what's being done. And we're seeing that progress all over the country.
Yeah, there's a lot more that's being done, which is why I think the Republicans are trying to stop and claw back the spending that should be going out the door. Because, again, this is about killing a Biden legacy more than it's they care about inflation or they care about debt. Because they give me a break. They don't care about either of those.
Yeah, no, they're demanding that all of these things that we got done, all of these jobs being created, that's what they want to roll back. They don't want new jobs in the solar industry. They don't want new jobs in the wind industry. They don't want people to have tax credits for you know, for energy conservation. They don't want any of that. They also don't want, by the way, lower insulin prices. They want that rolled back too. They don't want Medicare to be able to negotiate with drug companies over prices. They're trying to roll all that stuff back, and they're holding the default thing as a hostage. It's really outrageous.
I'm of the mindset, Mike, that I think Biden's got to take a position of I'm not going to be held hostage by children. We don't negotiate with terrorists. This debt ceiling thing is unconstitutional. You're going to pay the bills. He said it today. We're not a deadbeat nation. We've spent this money. You got to pay your bills. If you want to talk about future spending, that's fine. We'll talk about future process and all that. But you pay the bills right now and force them to take us to the Supreme Court. Force the Supreme Court to say, nope, Republicans are right, that we can default and we can basically collapse the global economy. I think I'm willing to roll the dice on that, on this side of it.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's exactly right. And yeah, we can't negotiate with these folks. They are insane. What they want to do is drive the economy over the cliff. We can't negotiate with that. It's ridiculous. We've got to just, Biden has just got to pay the bills and get things done and not worry about these nuts. We can't throw the economy over the cliff. We got enough problems without that.
I know, and that's the weird thing is, you know, families are struggling. The pain is real. Look, when we went and did our Working Class Heroes tour, we talked to people in place after place, used to be city after used to be place, and the pain is real. The struggle is real. The job losses are real. All of this stuff, and this is the part that infuriates me. They don't seem to care. I mean, it's like we the people are a backdrop in their little drama. And I'm hoping at some point that we wake up to the reality that it's not red hat or blue hat. It's not right or left. It's not Democratic or Republican. It's top down. It's the very wealthy against the rest of us. And while we're in the scrum beating each ourselves senseless, they are literally robbing us blind.
Oh, yeah. Billionaires added hundreds of billions of dollars to their wealth over the last couple of years. While there was a recession due to COVID, they were making money hand over fist, and they want to keep it that way. They want their taxes lowered again. They want to be able to charge whatever they want to charge for food and drugs and oil and everything else. Republicans talk a lot about freedom. Their definition of freedom is they want the freedom to be an asshole. They want the freedom to do whatever they want to whoever they want to do it anytime they want to do it, and to hell with the consequences. Decent people have to say, no, we're not going to do it that way anymore.
No, you're spot on. I do want to get your thoughts because there's a lot of political rumblings going on of, you know, the no labels people, the third way people. We're going to run. You know, there's whispers of Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema or them pulling somebody to run this moderate middle of the road to run against Biden. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I think the whole thing is absurd because what's middle of the road to these folks is the same thing we've just been talking about. What's middle of the road to them is that people keep paying hundreds of dollars for insulin. That's middle of the road, right? Or middle of the road is like, oh, well, rich people shouldn't have to pay any more in taxes. Oh, middle of the road. Let's see. Well, let's cut your Social Security. That's a good middle of the road thing to do. That is the most unpopular agenda in America. So I'd like them to be able to find somebody who can get more than 3% of the vote with an agenda like that. It, you know, does it threaten the Democrats' ability to win the election next time? Maybe. But I also think Democrats should just say, look, we're not going to be scared of you. We're not going to be bullied by you. We're going to run, you know, an economic populist campaign. We're going to talk about how the Republicans and the No Labels folks are both bought and paid for by the same people. And we're fighting for working people. And I think if you run that kind of campaign, we'll win no matter whether there's one candidate against us or two candidates against us or three candidates against us. We can win as long as we are fighting for working people.
There you go. Mike, I appreciate the time. Always good stuff. Keep up the great work there at American Family Voices. Hope folks will check out the website, AmericanFamilyVoices.org. We'll get links out on social media. Mike Lux, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. And now I'm going back to the L.A. Golden State game.
So. There you go. thanks so much, Mike. Again, AmericanFamilyVoices.org is the website. Check out the incredible work that they do. And you may remember we partnered up with Mike and his group during the Working Class Heroes Tour, and we're grateful for that. We're going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day the administration shut down the University of Paris at Noirtier. Student protests at the school had begun weeks before around the idea of a sexual revolution, or the right of young people to sleep together if they choose to without adult interference or moralizing. The student demonstrations grew into a protest against the French government and a cry for sweeping education and social reforms. A group of 150 students had briefly occupied the Noirtier administration offices in late March, issuing their demands. When the administration decided to close the campus rather than address the students' grievances, anger grew beyond the campus. 4 days later, 20,000 students at the Sorbonne campus, the flagship of the University of Paris, rallied in support of their fellow students. The police demanded they disperse, but the students refused. The next day, 50,000 protesters battled police in the streets of Paris's Latin Quarter. Public outcry grew as police brutality mounted against the student protesters. On May 13th, an estimated 1 million people marched through the streets of Paris. Workers in factories walked out on strike and occupied factories. The general strike spread until more than 20% of the entire population of France had walked off the job. Most of these strikes were spontaneous, wildcat actions, and not centrally coordinated. Millions protested in the streets. French President Charles de Gaulle realized his country stood on the brink of a full-blown revolution. So, he declared that France would hold elections, giving the citizens the final say. This quelled the protest movement. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, during the break, I was thinking about, you know, last October, and Mike and American Family Voices were one of the sponsors of our Working Class Heroes radio tour, where we went, you know, throughout, you know, all the way across Pennsylvania into Ohio and Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, and you know, we were going to places where we used to make stuff. We went to places where those were factory towns, and you see the infrastructure that's been just forgotten. These buildings, these relics of the past, where people still held the pride of, you know, we used to do this, we used to be this, and that identity is still they're still clinging to that identity that Trump gave them the belief that he was going to bring all that back. And as we were talking to people, that came through, that they believed that nobody cared about them, Democrats or Republicans. And look, there's a lot. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, Democrats are no champions. The Republicans, you know, did their foolhardy best to make things worse. Democrats didn't do a lot to help. And that anger is real and that anger is justified. And I completely get it. Because I lived through deindustrialization when I grew up in Cleveland. The factories that used to line Brook Park Avenue by the Ford and the Chevy plant, that are gone. They're abandoned. There's nothing there. Those were lives lost. Those were families broken. That was pain and struggle. And I remember in 16 when I said, in April of 16, when I said, there's no question in my mind Donald Trump's going to be president. And people, mocked me and said, oh, you're an idiot. And I said, no, the reality is he's touched something that the working class of this country can grab onto. They believe he cares. And you can't change that. They believe that he hears them. Now, was he part of, did he profit off of? Certainly, off of their demise. But they bought the line. They bought the snake oil. And they're still holding on to the snake oil. That, he's the guy who's gonna right the ship. And, he was such a good projector. He was so good at saying things that people wanted to hear. It's like any con man. They always make you feel special. Until you wake up and realize that, well, you just got conned. That your wallet's a little bit lighter, your future's a little bit less bright, and you're still stuck in the same horrible position you were. So as we were going through these people and talking, going through these places and talking to people, the light bulb hadn't really gone on yet, but they were honest and said, no, nothing has happened yet. We're hoping that the past will be recreated, the fabulous 50s and the manufacturing era that was. And I was reminding them, understand, those were policy decisions. Everything that's gone wrong with the working class of this country has been at the point of a pen. It's been policy that did this. It was our bad trade deals. And yes, Clinton signed them, but Republicans were on board with it. It was birthed under Reagan, fully negotiated under H.W. Bush, and Clinton tried to put some lipstick on that pig and signed it into law. Because the consensus of the neoliberals and the conservatives was, hey, we're going to send all those dirty factory jobs overseas. We're going to get really cheap labor. And then we'll be able to have all of this bounty of cheap stuff. And, those workers who will lose their job, yeah, we'll find them other things. We'll educate them because they're just, idiot factory workers. We'll give them some education. That was the liberal view. And look, people were happy in their factory jobs. They loved creating things. Not everyone is going to get a college degree. And we had leaders who didn't understand that. We had leaders who were probably too smart for their own good. And now we're in this moment. Now we're in this moment where there's a president who's saying, you know what? We need policies that are going to bring back manufacturing. We need policies that are going to tax the very wealthy and redistribute wealth back to the way it used to be. Now, we're not doing it anywhere near what we should be doing, but there's talk of doing something. And this is where I keep coming back to. I have some hope in Biden. He was not my first choice. He was my fourth. But the policies he's moving on, I think are moving us in a right direction. Problem, we've got a Republican Party hell-bent on undoing everything that he's done. We've got a Republican Party hell-bent on restraining the economy so that, and under the guise, and this is my favorite part, they're going to slow the economy, and we're going to limit but grow. The limit but grow. It's brilliant. What they're really saying is we want to starve society of government spending to the point to where jobs are lost, thousands of them, hundreds of thousands of them, and we're going to take demand out of the economy so that everything slows down, and they think that'll bring inflation down. And that means working people are going to have to suffer. Understand how this is going, because this is not what they're telling us. So they're going to have to harm the economy to lower the prices that are not going to be lowered. Because as the Wall Street Journal said, why Why is inflation so sticky? Oh, yeah. Could be corporations. How about not it could be? How about it is? Pretty simple. Common sense, actually. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. You miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. I want to hear your thoughts, especially crazy ones. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic ABC Media News app.